So today I'll pick up case 42 with Liang Shan. He studied with Dung On the latter and served him as an attendant for many years. Once the teacher entered the hall without his robe, Liang Shan went out, recovered the robe, and brought it to his teacher. As Dung On took the robe and put it on, he asked, "What is it beneath the robe?" Liang Shan did not respond. Dung On said, "It is most painful when one who studies Buddhism has not yet reached that stage. Now you ask me and I'll tell you." Liang Shan said, "What is that beneath your patched robe?" Dung On said, "Intimacy." Liang Shan had realization. And that is the koan, but the dialogue continued. Liang Shan, on having realization, made full bows, and his tears of gratitude wet his robe. Dung On said, "Now that you have had a taste of realization, can you express it?" Liang Shan said he could, so Dung On asked, "What is that beneath your patched robe?" Liang Shan immediately said, "Intimacy." Dung On acknowledged him, saying, "Intimacy. Intimacy." Akin Roshi and Francis Cook have, with very small details, similar translations. But let me read you another translation, however, which obscures and almost makes meaningless this beautiful exchange. Dung On asked Liang Shan, "What is that under the patchwork robe?" Liang Shan had no answer. Dung On said, "In studying Buddhism, if you don't reach this state, that is most miserable. Now please, you ask me." Liang Shan said, "What is that under the patchwork robe?" Dung On said, "It is within." With this, Liang Shan was greatly enlightened. Dung On said, "Now can you say something?" And Liang Shan responded affirmatively. And Dung On asked, "What is under the robe?" Liang Shan said, "It is within." Dung On said, "Inner being, it exists within." So intimate means, according to my dictionary, belonging to or characterizing one's deepest nature. It also relates to an inner or inmost nature, an inward quality or feature. So with these definitions, we can see why the translator used the words he did. It is within, inner being. Yet the fact of Zazen is that when we look within, when we search, we find, as did Hui Ko when he searched for his heart mind, that there really isn't a within. When we look closely, we find no walls at all. The other way to say that, then, is that we find only vast space, a boundlessness. It is so vast that heaven and earth are narrow, are small compared to it. No walls in the mind or boundlessness are just different words for true intimacy. The intimacy which contains an inner and outer is relative. The intimacy of Zazen allows what is right before you to fill your mind, which is mindfulness. When what is right before you fills you, there isn't room for conceptions or abstractions. Intimacy, again returning to the dictionary, is the state of being close or familiar. So familiar that we are all known as kin, as family. When we are close like that, like in the middle of the night, and you reach your hands and arms out to entangle them with your lover, with your partner, with your intimate, There is no inside, outside, or in between. When we say inner being, it exists within, we simply create confusion. When we posit inner and outer, we begin to search and look, and we immediately go past the very fact of reality. When we assert an inner and outer, we simultaneously create an object which separates us. And from this simple misdirection arises loneliness, sadness, alienation, and a weighted feeling of inadequacy, of insufficiency, of lack. By creating the thought of inside and outside, we make objects, and we instantly begin to look for what we have put outside ourselves. In a sense, we miss ourselves, and so we begin to search. Intimacy, though, means no search is necessary. Things animate or inanimate, near or far away, born or not yet born, are already closer to you than your own skin, closer than your own bones, closer than your own kidneys, liver, and spleen. Each is closer to you than even your own breath. That is why we say in Sesshin, let Mu do Mu. Let the breath breathe you. Let the sounds fill you. The only thing you're needed for, in a sense, is to get you to the cushion on time. All other things will be taken care of by your practice and by the schedule and by the calling of ravens and by the dripping of rain from upside down bells and by the fragrance of dead flowers. We do not only hear sounds because we have ears or smell fragrance because we have noses, or see red, yellow, and green because we have eyes. We hear because we are. We are sound. We are fragrances. We are colors, shapes, and forms. The one with no eyes still sees. The one with no nose still smells. And the one with no ears hears. We experience. We experience things because we are those very things. So please trust your intention. It has brought you to this moment, a wonderful and beautiful moment. It has brought you to this place filled with raven calls, with cascading rain and wind, and with magnificent colors of gray and black, of steel blue and hemlock green. So please trust your practice. Allow it to be what it is at the very bottom, whether you're aware of it or not. Intimate, with no inside or outside, with no Buddhas or beings. Intimate, allowing what is right before you to fill you, to fill your mind and heart. It is said that when Liang Shan grew mature in expression and began to teach the Dharma, he always spoke of intimacy. There was one dialogue with a student I read that I especially enjoyed, and I'd like to read it to you. Once a student asked, "What about when it is hard to protect the house against thieves?" Liang Shan said, "If you are aware of them, they won't trouble you." The monk said, "After you recognize them, what then?" Liang Shan said, "You can send them to the land of no birth." The student asked, "Isn't that the place where they live in peace?" Liang Shan said, "Stagnant water does not harbor dragons." The student continued on, "What is the dragon?" The teacher said, "She makes waves without making a ripple." And the monk said, "What about when all the pools are emptied and the mountains are leveled?" Liang Shan got down from his seat, grabbed the student and said, "Don't please wet the corners of this old monk's robes." So we know very little about Liang Shan's history, but I think this back and forth with his student gives us a lovely way into his teaching of intimacy. So I'd like to look closely at what he said. The student said, "What about when it is hard to protect the house against thieves? What about when thoughts and feelings, when emotions and sensations are assailing your zazen? What about when you can't even get to number 5 in your breath counting, or you cannot even do one mu without being battered and banged on? What about when it is the second day of Sesshin and it is windy and wet and you didn't sleep well and your shoulders are tight, your knees hurting and your back in pain?" Liang Shan said, "If you are aware of them, they won't bother you. Just be aware of them. Stay with the one practice you were given, and don't move from method to method looking for relief. Sit up into your body with a softly straightened back and an open chest. Take 1 or 2 deep breaths and settle into the middle of your cushion. Then count 1 or 2 cycles of breath to 10. Breathing in, and on the exhale, 1. Breathing in, and on the out-breath, 2. The point isn't to get to number 10, but to fully inhabit each point. And continue to let in the sounds, the smells, and the sensations, thus making what we suppose are enemies into friends. If counting breath is your practice, stay with that. If not, after 1 or 2 cycles of 10, move into mu, or who hears, or into your body practice. Stay with your particular practice, your anchor, your refuge, but do not block out anything that arises. Staying with allows the development and cultivation of intimacy. Pushing away, noting, or ignoring makes practice into two things, which is the beginning point of dukkha. Liang Shan says, rather than creating dukkha, invite the thieves in. Invite in your anger or arrogance. Invite in your unsatisfactoriness or ill-being. Those things, each thing, is allowed here, but stay with your given practice. The monk thought he had invited the thieves in and had been aware of them, but still he felt bothered. He still felt bothered by them, so he asked, "After you recognize them, what then?" He imagines it can't be as simple as that, can it? And Liangshan said, you can then send them to the land of the unborn. Where is that, I wonder? You can send them to the land of the unborn, where there is no subject or object, no within or without, no being or non-being. But still, where is that? Here or somewhere else? Now or later? If later, when? The Lotus Sutra says, all Buddhas appear in the world only for the sake of the one great matter. And I would add, and all phenomena are constantly pointing to, are expressing, are presenting it. Remember, Liangshan is always teaching and showing the unborn. If you do not yet understand unborn or aren't intimate, what wall of your mind and heart is keeping you from it? It is absolutely okay that that wall is there, that the wall exists. Now all you need do is lean ever so gently into it, into your sense of fear or insufficiency or inadequacy. Just lean slightly and stay with mu, with breath, with sounds. You need do no more than that, but also no less. The student then shifted his tack a bit and said, isn't the land of the unborn where they live in peace? He clearly has looked at maps and read travel journals, but he is still steeped in his ideas about Liangshan's words. The monk thinks that in true practice, there is only peace and harmony, that the unborn is a place of happiness and delight only. The monk is chasing the ideal rather than settling into the real, the reality that ravens fly with broken wings, that the sun doesn't come out for days on end in this teardrop-shaped valley, and that the cold of the winter can freeze you to the bones. But fortunately, Liangshan immediately expressed the reality of this practice, saying, stagnant water does not harbor dragons, and dragons throw up waves without creating ripples. The dragon, Liangshan, finally showed his fangs and talon. The water Liangshan lives in teems with possibility. Just like the silence, pregnant. It isn't stagnant or static, although it appears often to be calm, tranquil, or motionless. Yet it reflects whatever passes before it. And the dragon rises from it, never creating even a ripple. But that dragon acts as it will in each unique situation, guided by wisdom and compassion, which is intimacy. Right before the student, the entire time was a dragon, was the unborn embodied, with no walls constraining her. And yet, the monk, assaulted by his own ideas and constructs, never truly allowed himself to be aware of them. He kept them outside, and so he had to ask and ask and ask again, making his own points while the real was at his house waiting to be admitted, waiting to be known. The whole world is constantly sitting at your house, sitting at the doorway, knocking, wanting to be admitted, wanting to be known, wanting to be embodied by you. The student's still not aware of what was right before him, threw out some old and tired words, saying, but what about when everything is leveled and even, the pools emptied and the mountains flat? What about, he is saying, my ideas of emptiness? Isn't that peaceful, harmonious, and joyous? The dragon, now intimately engaged, stepped from his seat, grabbed the student, and said, don't wet the corners of this old dragon's robes. This is an immediate and direct response, a thorough and exhaustive coming forward, a transparency that has nothing to do with words or letters. And Liang Shan could step forward like this because he intimately knew what there is beneath the patched robe.